Azure podcast and YouTube blog covering the German startup scene with news, interviews, and live events.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Joe from StartupRate.io, your startup podcast and YouTube blog from Germany, as well as the world's only and first internet radio station dedicated to startups 24/7. If you haven't done so already, make sure you hit the like and subscribe button wherever you're seeing or listening to this interview. Today, I do have a Munich-based startup in the person of Fabian here with me. Hey, Fabian, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. It's really great to have you here. And you have a very, very interesting background, you told me before we started, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, whether it's interesting or not, I think that's for the listener to decide. But, you know, everything I've done in the past and I'm doing now is a lot of fun for me and has been a lot of fun for me. So for me, it was and still is very interesting. Yes.
That is really cool because of course, as always, we'll link down here in the show notes your LinkedIn profile, and people will see there that you've done a lot of things. But you told me starting at 14 years old, you have actually been producing music, and you work together with well-known names like DJ Tiesto.
Yeah, exactly. So you know, since I'm young, I've always been driven by pursuing my own projects and doing my own thing. And back in the day, you know, what really hit me was kind of electronic dance music. So I really liked this whole, you know, feeling of the music and also the idea behind making your own tracks. And you know, so when I was 14, I actually started producing my own tracks. I found that very exciting. And then, you know, a few months later, I was able to sign my first record deal. And then, you know, a year later, I was able to play alongside, you know, very well-known DJs. And, you know, they kind of played my tracks and released them on their labels, up to the point where I was actually then releasing stuff on Tiesto's label. You know, he was playing my tracks. I was remixing a lot of well-known artists, you know, released one track on Universal Music, which got to the number one dance charts in Austria, you know, in Europe. And yeah, it's been a great hobby, which at some point I also made kind of my career in some way. Yeah. And on the other hand, I was always pursuing, you know, more entrepreneurial projects. So a mix between being very creative and then at the same time, you know, doing stuff that has always been very exciting for me.
You do have a lot of positions in your CV, but the first one I would like to start talk a little bit about is you've been actually with Adobe in the past. Was this like your first look inside a US-based tech company, really an inside look?
Yeah, I mean, in that sense, yes. So I've always been interested in tech, and I've, you know, as I mentioned, I pursued a lot of my own projects in that sector. But for me, it was super interesting to really get to know, you know, a well-known US tech company, right, from the inside out, and learn some of their best practices. You know, they're not really a startup anymore, of course, so they're more like a corporate now, but still they have this, you know, very American, tech vibe. And that was a very interesting experience for me. You know, I had great people I was able to work alongside with, and my manager was also very supportive. And I gained a lot of insights that now help me in my career and whatever I'm doing now.
Ah, I see. And your interest, because you're with eBot 7. Actually, when you Google eBot, there are several robots coming up, but you guys are actually producing a chatbot. And I've noticed you already started like back in 2016 as the publisher, author, and co-founder of a daily newsletter called Chatbot News Daily. Can you talk a little bit about what you guys are doing? And for everybody who's interested, down here in the show notes, there will be a link where you can actually subscribe if you're a chatbot fan.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, as I mentioned, I've always been driven by making change and pursuing my projects and, you know, working on very meaningful stuff or creative stuff. And, you know, in 2016, you know, a good old friend of mine, Xaver, and we've known each other for 20 years, and Max, you know, our third co-founder, with three co-founders, actually, you know, we kind of realized that there's a massive problem on this planet, which is customer service, right? Because I think everyone knows that when you call a company, you have a problem, you call this respective number, and then you're on a hotline, and they say, hey, it's another 20 minutes for you to wait until someone picks up the phone, or you send an email, and you need to wait 5 days for a reply. And I think that's a pain point everyone knows. And at the same time, you're losing a lot of time because of this waiting. And time, in my personal opinion, is one of the most valuable goods on this planet, right? Because you can have a lot of money, you can have a lot of fun, but if, you know, if time is running out, you can't get it back, essentially. And we said, you know, we want to tackle this problem. And at the same time, we said, you know, a perfect technology to leverage, to automate and to make customer service more efficient is AI. So, you know, taking these two things and putting them together, you know, made us found eBot 7, which now offers AI for customer service. So you could call it a chatbot. Nowadays, you call it conversational AI because it's not only a bot that kind of does FAQs. It can also do very complex inquiries on different various different channels. Yeah, and we've now grown the company from three founders to 100 FTEs. It's actually a little bit more than 100 FTEs now. And we're super happy to be able to support very well-known brands across Europe and, you know, worldwide to make their customer service operations more efficient. And as you asked about Chatbot News Daily as well, when we went into the space, we said that we didn't want to just found a company and offer the service or the best service in the space. We also wanted to be able to educate the market and you know, offer something to clients, but also everyone who is interested in this type of technology to learn about the benefits, about the technological developments and so on. So we also founded Chatbot News Daily, which is now the largest news blog about chatbots, conversational AI bots, and what, you know, intelligent virtual assistants and whatever else name you want to give this type of topic. Yeah, and we have a lot of visitors, and they're always looking at articles, and there's independent writers that release their pieces on the blog. And I think it's a great way to, you know, also educate the market about the benefits of AI and what we do. And yeah, that's the background story, really.
And that is quite interesting. And as you were talking, I was smiling and thought, have you guys ever considered to actually let a bot write this daily newsletter?
So, I mean, what we do is natural language understanding or natural language processing. And, you know, we're not that much doing natural language generation. So, you know, we've played with the thought, and I'm sure that our tech team who does Free Fridays from time to time has probably built a funny thing like this in the past. But we haven't actually put it into production yet. But I will take this idea back to the table, and maybe soon you'll find the first machine-generated articles. And then you have to let me know whether you realize they were done by a machine or whether you think they were written by a human.
A handful of people may have already read something you're writing, because I realized you're also a guest publisher and author on VentureBeat, based in the Silicon Valley, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're very cool magazine. And back in the day, in 2016, they were also one of the first magazines to really pick up on, you know, conversational AI and on AI for customer service and all these sorts of topics. Yeah, and then they approached us and, you know, asked us because, you know, we were kind of the thought and still are the thought leaders in Europe regarding this topic. So they approached us and said, you know, we have a lot of news and a lot of publishing about US companies and how this whole topic is, you know, accelerating in the US market, but not so much. We don't have that much knowledge about the European market. So, you know, they approached us and we said, hey, sure, we're happy to help out here. So now, you know, we released guest articles, we released you know, some landscapes and frameworks about how the ecosystem looks like over here in Europe. Yeah, and it's been super fun to work with them.
And basically, my understanding is that your interest in chatbots also triggered your co-founding of eBot 7. But before that, I just want to touch a little bit on the KI Bundesverband. Yes, that's a German word, and it's the German AI Association. And you guys, or you personally, have been a founding member. Is that true?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, that I think the AI Association was founded 2 years after we founded eBot 7, and it was quite a coincidence because you know, Jörg Bienert, who's the chairman of the KI Bundesverband, the German AI Association in English, you know, we both had a talk and a panel at the FKI, which is the, you know, the German Institute for Artificial Intelligence. And he actually had the idea to found the AI Association in order to foster the German AI ecosystem. Because if you look at the US, if you look at China, there has been and still is a lot being done to support startups. A lot of money is being invested into, you know, research and developments, into universities, into, you know, lectures, into good professors, into, you know, governmental funding money, into the regulation that supports, you know, innovative ideas and the foundation of startups, but not so much in Germany and the EU. And, you know, we had a chat there and, you know, said, hey, do you want to join me on this journey? And obviously, as I know all of these problems, you know, firsthand through our own market in eBot 7, I said, yeah, let's definitely do it. And it's been going quite well so far. So, you know, the AI Association now has more than 250 member companies. There's a lot of like papers being released on different topics. You know, there's very well, a very good connection to the politicians. And you know, we also have some managing directors now who are doing a great job. So it's great to see what has happened and how this whole thing has developed.
What is your outlook for Germany on the AI game? Because there are always horror scenarios where China and the US are winning and Europe, especially Germany, is losing out. Do you really see this situation, or do you think that it's currently in the balance somehow?
Well, you know, that there's, since we founded the association, there have been some positive things, right? So there has been more funding release, and I think the topic is now more present on a lot of people's plates. But at the same time, there's a lot of hurdles, right? So, you know, it's still very hard in Europe to get a lot of funding. So once you hit a certain tipping point in terms of funding size, you know, you need to speak to US investors, essentially. There's now discussions about, you know, whether companies, once they do an M&A transaction or something, should be regulated, and that the government can say, hey, we don't want this company to be sold to US company. And, you know, it's always a very fine balance between regulating stuff and over-regulation, because, you know, if you tell founders who want to, you know, build great companies, that you need to get funding outside of Europe at some point because there's not enough VC cash here, or there's not enough government support. At the same time, you know, maybe companies founded in Germany can't be sold to companies, you know, from the US. Then the question arises whether you as a founder, you know, move to the US and found your startups over there, right? Because just there's just more flexibility. So that's just a few, you know, a few out of a lot of points. You know, I wanted to mention, but I think it's slowly moving into the right direction, but there's still a lot that needs to be caught up with.
If you would have like a wish list, what needs to be done here, especially in Germany, for the politicians? What would be like a few picks for this wish list? Like increased funding for like essential research? Is there something else you would like to have there?
Yeah, it's a mix. I mean, you know, it's data security. So one thing is, you know, to make sure that every company and that the legislation is not over-regulating stuff, which makes it harder for companies, or at least, you know, it makes it easier for us as startups to integrate stuff because companies are not scared of, you know, data security issues and especially, you know, regulatory stuff they have to go through. It would definitely be funding. It's a very time-consuming process if you want to get governmental support in terms of money, because it's a very, very long process and that takes some, you know, a lot of time to get through it. And obviously that's not really on the same level as startups if you want to grow quickly. So these are a few things. Then, you know, just recently with this M&A stuff I just mentioned, to not over-regulate stuff once again. You know, then obviously make sure that, you know, universities and so on have enough money and support from the government. So, you know, the very talented professors and so on stay in Germany and not just go over to Stanford and the MIT to teach, you know, the lessons there. So I think it's a great mix of a lot of different things. And then as always, speeding things up, right? Not just talking about it, but just, you know, putting stuff into action. I think that's always very important.
Yeah, I know how that feels as an entrepreneur. Before that, in my corporate role, you used to prepare decisions and make long PowerPoint presentations. And now I skip all that stuff and get straight to doing. Sometimes, just sometimes, I really regret that and think, oh, dang it, I have to redo this because I did not think it through. But basically, in general, for me right now, that works better. That there may be a time in the future when this does not work for me anymore, but right now it's working pretty well. Talking about working pretty well, eBot7, your startup company, you guys are around for like approximately 5 years, and as you said, you are a thought leader and a very early chatbot pioneer as well. What most people will have in mind when they're talking about chatbots will be, I remember vividly from the times when you first had like the automated hotlines. Yeah, if you want to continue, say yes, yes. I didn't understand. If you want to continue, that's the stuff people have in mind when they talk, when they think about bots and automated customer service. I do believe you work on a very different vision.
Yeah, so exactly. So you know, what we've done when we founded the companies was we said, if you want to build a successful company, it needs to be centered around a mission. And that's really to help companies make their service more efficient on one hand by automating answers and complex processes. On the other hand, supporting customer service agents, in other words, the humans that are working in customer service to work or be able to work more efficiently, and then build an AI or to build a system, you know, a technology that, you know, works so good that, you know, people are very happy about using it. Consumers are very happy about using it instead of saying, oh, that's just another bot I'm speaking to again. So what we've done straight from the beginning, we've centered our product development around the customer. So I would say nowadays 75 to 80% of our product is built based on customer feedback, and we work very closely with our customers actually still, because we think it's all about relationships and, you know, learning from each other and so on. And that being said, you know, we now have a low code conversation AI platform specifically designed for customer service that brings a lot of functionality out of the box that agents need to do their job very easily, and at the same time for admins and the ones, you know, the supervisors of these teams, that, you know, to give them the tools to modify their bots in the perfect way, whatever works best for the companies, and then being able to integrate. So we're also very flexible on the integrations to really blend into the customer service environment the company has, whether that's a Salesforce integration, whether that's Zendesk, whether that's Userline. You know, there's a lot of different tools companies might want to integrate in, and also a lot of backend system. And, you know, by combining all of these things, we are now able to provide them a technology that works and can be onboarded very quickly, but also brings so much stuff out of the box that companies are very happy just to work with it. And in essence, you know, what it does is, you know, you can either fully automate stuff, which goes from a basic question like, where can I find this product? And then the bot would answer, hey, you can find the product here, to more complex processes where, you know, there's actually a complete workflow that needs to be automated. So for example, in the insurance industry, it could be a claims process where there's a lot of follow-up questions being asked, a lot of contextual stuff being done, backend systems being connected to verify users, to make sure that the claim process actually can be executed fully. And at the core of the system, and that's what is very important for us, lies our hybrid agent plus AI model. And we call this real-time supervised learning, because obviously you want the AI to continuously learn, but at the same time to include the human if needed, so the customer, as you asked in the beginning, gets the perfect answer. And as this works, is the following. So once you start a project with us, you would essentially train the system with data. Can be first level support inquiries, can be historic support tickets, or it can be, as I mentioned, a claims process, so which would be a flow we then design inside the console. And then you set a confidence level, so let's say 97%. And if there's an incoming inquiry and the system is more confident than 97, the answer, the process will be fully automated. And everything that falls below the confidence level would then be sent to a human agent as an AI-based suggestion. So the human agent doesn't have to write, you know, look around for an answer, they just need to say, okay, this is correct, send, and thereby train the system and save time because they didn't have to write anything, but just click. Or they can adjust the message or choose something else. And that's how the system continuously learns. So, you know, we also put the human as the in the center of such a technology to make sure that it really works exactly how the company wants it to work.
Okay, I understand. We are a B2B podcast, so there may be some potential buyers out there, some potential clients. Let us structure this a little bit for them. First and important question, maybe your tool is theoretically speaking applicable, usable around the world.
Absolutely, yeah. So we support a lot of languages, and you know, whether you're from the Asian region, whether you're from the US, whether I don't know, you're from the Nordics in Europe, we support all of the languages, so you can just start using it out of the box.
That would be very interesting, because I do believe language for conversational tool is very essential. I do look here on the website, of course, everybody who goes down here in the show notes, there's a link to your company website, and I do see that you have like a really broad base of clients from the German AAA version, ADAC. They help you when your car breaks down on the roadside, to insurance company. I see a flower company. I see Milo, world renowned for very good, well-made home appliances. Siemens, down to companies even like Lovo, which is, I assume, the online dating app, to even the soccer club Schalke 04. So for me, it would be very interesting to learn with which context content is this chatbot, so to say, arriving. So how much does your customer service need to train, need to adapt this bot? Because I don't think your tool comes with a preset of Mandarin soccer terms when a soccer club in China asks you, reach out for you. So what is like the basic package a client could expect from you here?
So that's a very good question. So we, as you mentioned, you know, we have certain focus industries. You know, the companies you just mentioned are from, you know, depending on who you're speaking about, from these certain industries. For us, it's the first step is to really talk to the clients and identify their pain points, because we're all about solving problems, right? So, you know, for example, if you look at the e-commerce sector, most of the time, and you probably know it yourself, you have questions around when does my order arrive, right? Parcel tracking and stuff like that, and then returns. And with a lot of companies, this is like their biggest pain point, right? Most of the percentages of their customer service volume. In the insurance sector, it can be claims processes. It can be, you know, stuff like my car broken down, as you mentioned. And, you know, with the football or soccer clubs, you know, it's essentially also kind of e-commerce-y because they're also selling shirts and so on. And what we've done is we've pre-trained our algorithms, right? So out of the box, they come in various different languages, and they already understand synonyms, syntax, morphology, spelling mistakes, and so on. And usually the system understands the incoming inquiries directly. So if you ask, hey, when does my order arrive? The system already knows what the customer is asking for. The only thing the system still needs is the answer, or in essence, the process that should be triggered as a reply. Because even though the question is very similar in every language and every, you know, in every company, right? When does my order arrive? Or what, you can ask this in English, you can ask it in German, in French, in Chinese, and so on. But essentially, the answer will be slightly different. That's the data the system then needs from the company. So we have pre-trained data sets, of course. And depending on the size of the project, we also fine tune the model based on the client. But we still need the data that kind of, you know, the companies want to reply with, because that's very company specific. And that's then either trained in the beginning via upload or via connecting to a knowledge base or using historical support tickets or building in the process workflows, or by the human agent plus AI model, where the agent kind of trains the model. Yeah, and that's how we can serve a lot of different industries and also a lot of different markets, which is quite cool.
just between you and me and like 25,000 people listening to this this interview or viewing it on YouTube, can you tell us a little bit few secrets here? Because I would be curious, when you start a new language, when you add languages, is there like some kind of logic, some kind of general human understanding you can use from the chatbots you trained in other languages and kind of transplant this and just add the words in the other language? Or do you always start in each language completely from scrap?
So there's two ways to go on about this. One is to have the algorithm in the respective language, and this then comes pre-trained with a lot of data from the language, right? There's a lot of different proprietary data sets we have to pre-train these algorithms in the respective language. And usually we use, you know, a specific language-specific algorithm for a specific market if the company has a decentralized service team, which means, so for example, a company could have a service center, a big contact center in Europe, in Germany, for example, in France. They could have a big service center in the US that would be English-speaking. And then they have one in Asia that's, you know, let's say Asian speaking, or, you know, speaks Mandarin or something. And then if they have a lot of data and a lot of support agents in each respective service center, then we use, you know, native algorithms, because there's a lot of training data to work with. In other examples, and of course these algorithms come pre-trained, and in other examples, you know, for example, an e-commerce shop that has a headquarter in the US but serves, you know, also South American clients, right, who speak Spanish and so on, or Portuguese, then, you know, it can be handy to use translation layers, because they essentially have a centralized service team that speaks English and maybe one person that does, you know, cover the South American market. But you wouldn't want to set up a knowledge base in each respective language. So in that case, you would use a translation layer that then, you know, translates an incoming Spanish question into English, matches this, and then the answer or the process will be translated back into Spanish and then goes out. So for the end client, it's all in Spanish, but internally with the company working with the system, it would be in English. And nowadays, you know, these translation algorithms are so advanced that with, I would say, most languages, you don't even realize a difference. So there's two ways to go on about this.
Oh, so your translation layer is better than Google Translate. I see that. Okay. I was then thinking, okay, now somebody's convinced here. And what is like your rule of thumb between now, purchase, and at what point in the future can your clients actually use this tool? Like, does it usually take, of course, we're talking about more happy clients and more satisfying customer service interactions. At what point is your tool like fully living up to the KPIs you are showing in your sales presentations? How long does it take for a company to really see the benefits of the tool?
So, you know, my personal opinion is, now that we've built the product for 5 years and always incorporated the client feedback, that you can actually see the benefits from day one, right? Because what happens is, let's take a worst case. So we work with a company, they don't have much data to train the system with, and they just want to start, right? And they get access to the console and they off they go, right? Within 1 day. Now, what happens is, as we have this hybrid models, their agents would obviously still answer requests of or incoming service inquiries, because, you know, the AI doesn't have enough data yet. Yet, at the same time, the AI would already make suggestions to these agents on what the perfect answer could be. So now, in essence, even though the system isn't automating a lot yet, right, because it hasn't that much training data yet, the agents get supported and save average handling time. So, you know, even though it's only 1 or 2 days, the agents can work through the request more quickly. Now, this accelerates, right? Because every request they work on, the more the system learns. And then after 3 days, it can already automate, while at the same time still support the agents. So, you know, we had learning curves with clients, you know, above 61% full automation across all of their service after 2 months. And the company started with a very limited amount of data. So it depends on each case. But I would argue that if you just look at when does the tool generate benefits, it's actually straight from the beginning. Exactly. And then it increases over time.
Uh-huh. I see. Your tool makes miracles reality, right?
Yeah, we're doing our best.
I see. See. Now that we went through your product extensively, let us get a little bit back to the company. I've seen here on Crunchbase, of course, as always linked down here, you went until Series A and you raised a total funding of a little bit above 8 million. Are you guys currently looking for another funding round?
That's, you know, we usually don't speak that much about funding rounds. But, you know, obviously as a founder, you want to grow the company and we're evaluating various different options. And of course, if you want to grow and our plan is also to enter the US very soon, we might be. Exactly.
I see. And for my fan base here in Frankfurt, of course, Mein Inkubator, the main incubator of Commerzbank, one of Germany's largest bank, is also an investor with you guys. I've seen in a press release in the past.
Absolutely. Yeah. So they've actually been one of our first investors. So when we did our first seed round, they were kind of the lead investor on this round. And then we had some very supportive angels and, of course, Mein Inkubator, who believed in us from day one, basically. And they've been great so far. So, you know, they've been a great investor. You know, we can come to them with questions. They're also always investing in the follow-up rounds now. They believed in us from the beginning. And, we're very happy to have them on board.
Great. Just one more question, because you said you're looking to enter the United States. Do you have like a rule of thumb? Because we do have a listener base in North America, in the US and Canada, as well as a little bit in Mexico. When can they expect to have your tool ready there with the local established sales force?
Yeah. So, I mean, we're very dominant still in Europe, and we actually wanted to enter the US beginning of this year, but as it's still COVID times and travelers restricted and so on, we've postponed it a little bit, because when we do stuff, we do it fully and fully committed. So our plan now is to do it, you know, by the end of this year, beginning of next year. But of course, if the COVID situation changes earlier than this, and we have a very strong partner network already. We're also, you know, in contact with some very, very talented people. And, we're a founding team. And then essentially one of us founders would also move over there for the time being to really accelerate the market. So that's kind of the timeline I would mention here.
Uh-huh. And for everybody who's excited with this interview and is listening until the end, are you guys currently hiring?
Yes, we are. We're always hiring, actually. So, you know, our mantra is always, you know, if you find very talented people and you might not need them right now, but maybe in 3 months' time, we're always open for the conversation, because, you know, essentially a business is the people, right? So if you have a talented group of people that work together as a team and that bring great ideas to the table, you know, it's always great if you can get more of these people together. So, if you like our topic, if you think you can make an impact with us, feel free to contact me, right? Or contact our HR team. We are always open for discussion.
Yes, and say the magic word, Startup Radio.
Yeah.
Great. Fabian, it was such a pleasure having you here. Thank you for being like a half an hour being quizzed by me from all angles and directions. And are you still making music?
I am. Not as much as I've been used to, because if you're a founder and if your company is growing, you know, quite rapidly, sometimes you don't have as much time for your hobbies as you wish you had, but I'm still doing it. Yeah, of course.
Okay, and for everybody who'd like to learn more, he'll also provide us a link down here in the show notes where you can listen to some of his tunes as well. Fabian, thank you. It was a pleasure having you. Best of luck, and looking forward to speak to you soon again.
Yeah, thank you so much. And looking forward to more questions. And just contact me if you want to know more. And thanks for having me on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, bye.
If you are a professional looking at the European startup scene, Germany is a place you cannot miss. Fortunately for you, there is startuprad.eu, the authority on German startups. This English-only podcast brings you fresh interviews each week. Most likely, you have never heard or read anything on these startups before in English, but you will in the future. Be ahead of the curve and subscribe to startuprad.eu podcast, or check for the startuprad.eu internet radio station. Check your Alexa for the startuprad.eu skill as well.